If you're a fan of the Resilient Recruiter podcast, I've got exciting news. I'm hosting a special event for recruitment business owners in London on September 17th and 18th, and I'd love you to join us. If you want to achieve your full potential, you need to surround yourself with the right people. At the Recruitment Coach Live Summit, you'll get to meet some of my podcast guests in person, hang out with us, and share ideas. Some of the folks I've interviewed on the show will either be attending or speaking at the summit. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and we're joined today by Brian Adams. Brian is the CEO and founder of PH Creative, an award-winning employer branding agency with offices in Liverpool, London, San Diego, and Auckland. They work with famous brands such as Apple and Nike. And Brian helps his clients define their essence as a company, both in its uniqueness and what it stands for, and then crafts and aligns those aspirations with the people his clients are looking to attract. He's also a 2-time best-selling author. His latest book is Give and Get, Repel the Many and Compel the Few with Impact, Purpose, and Belonging. Great title. Looking forward to learning more about that shortly. Brian's written for the Harvard Business Review, Inc.com, and Entrepreneur Magazine. He's been featured in Forbes. Brian, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Mark, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on today.
So, Brian, I think you're from Liverpool, but now live in San Diego. I'd love to hear that story. My daughter is going to university in Liverpool right now. She's in her first year at Liverpool Hope.
Right.
And we've been there many times. It's a great city. How long have you lived in San Diego?
It's coming up to 6 years now. So it was a pure business decision in the first instance, but I ended up staying for a woman, fell in love.
Haha, I know that story well. That's the same reason I'm over here. So San Diego is a beautiful part of the world. So, you know, I am slightly jealous. I was there in spring last year, 2023. I was invited to speak at a conference for the Pinnacle Society, which is a collective of some of the top recruiters in the United States, and just love San Diego. It's a fantastic place. I am envious of you living in the warmth and sunshine there. You launched your employer branding and talent attraction agency in 2004, almost 20 years ago. How did you get into this line of work, Brian?
Well, it's more by good luck than anything else. I spontaneously quit a job I loved because a boss was really mean to me in front of about 50 people. And I didn't say anything. I just quietly got up, left, and didn't go back. In fact, that was March 30th, 2004. And PH was incorporated March 31st, 2004. And I was just...
Wow.
It was one of those things. Yeah, it was spontaneous. And I was determined to prove that you could be successful in business and not treat people so badly. So that was the start of the journey 20 years ago. And we started out as a general marketing organization, fell into employer branding because we started working with a couple of organizations that needed our services, but on the recruitment side. So it was more good luck and good fortune than planning. But the more and more we focused in space, we realized marketing directors didn't return our calls, but HR directors did. And the idea of building brand and marketing culture and contributing to people finding great careers that they loved was just a really, really interesting space and an opportunity that we jumped into, thankfully. And the more we niched down and decided to focus in, the more success we had. And it's been an exciting journey.
Amazing. And like, fast forward to today, well, on LinkedIn says you have over 100 employees. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
It is.
Incredible. In fact, amazing. And so I'm trying to think, even when I started recruiting in 1997, employer branding wasn't really a thing, at least not, it wasn't called that. Like did people even know what that meant when you started this marketing agency? How did it kind of evolve to what you're doing today?
Yeah, so we definitely didn't know about employer branding. And it's probably, we decided to niche down and sort of label ourselves only 10 or 12 years ago, actually. And then out of naivety and good fortune again, rather than just accept the conventions of employer brand, we built our own framework and philosophy to attack the marketplace, which turned out to be very different to the conventions of early day employer brand. And that set us up for our next opportunity to help differentiate and grow. And, you know, that was the start of the give and get philosophy.
All right. Let's talk about that then, because I'd love to hear an unconventional approach to employer branding and about your framework in the give and get philosophy. What does that mean? Like I love the title of the book, and especially the idea of attracting the few or compelling the many, attracting the few. Because when people talk about employer branding, they don't really, at least I have never come across the idea of actually building a brand that repels the wrong people. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, still in a recent survey, 70% of employer brand leaders still cite an increase in volume of applicants and traffic to their career site as a success metric when delivering an employer brand. I've never met a TA leader, a talent attraction leader, that just wants more applicants, more noise, more admin, more work to get to the people who are ideally matched. So, you know, when you look at great places to work and all of the badges of honor that are in our industry, it all points to wanting to be an intangible version of the best or the most attractive. So, you know, we just sort of disagree with that convention. And the idea is, if you're confident and clear enough to know your culture and what it takes to drive the organization forward, and you also can answer some fundamental questions of not just why people join, but why they stay, then you can craft a give and get proposition, which is a two-way value exchange of not just what you stand to get as an employer, but actually what you're willing to give in return. Candidates and employees alike can make very informed career decisions as to whether it's an ideal match. So rather than set out to be a magnet to attract, doesn't it make more sense to be a smart filter to repel the majority of the open market towards your organization and compel those who your message really resonates? So with eyes wide open, they're walking into their next career move, not despite the harsh realities and adversities they're going to find, but because of them. You know, and if you think about it, every organization has the elements of challenge and tough aspects, and some people like that and rise to those challenges, and some people see it as a barrier or a frustration or a negative aspect of their quality of life. And being able to distinguish between those two things means that you can align what the company needs to move forward with what people want and how they are made to feel in the employee experience. So that's the essential. That's the premise. And we've really found that it's helped us differentiate in the marketplace. And now it was a bit of a maverick idea 10 years ago, but now actually I think many people would agree it's become the new norm in our space. You know, so that's our little ding in the universe in the world of employer brand.
Fantastic. Okay, this is cool. So can you give me more detail? Like, how does that actually work? What is the smart filter, and what is, like, in practical terms, what does that look like?
So yeah, let me give you an example. Like two companies that we've worked for, Apple and Microsoft. Now on paper, there's actually quite a lot of similarity. They're massive, giant tech companies. There's opportunity to innovate in both. You know, they're massive organizations with a lot of similarity in terms of the structure and career opportunity and all the rest of it. Now, having worked with both those organizations, I can tell you that the culture and the experience are so different, it's unbelievable. So if we take Apple, they're very organic and there is very little structure, believe it or not, inside of Apple. It's much more relationship-based, which is remarkable for such a big organization, whereas Microsoft is hierarchical, structured, and very clear from that perspective. So somebody who would thrive in Microsoft with the same professional skills might actually find Apple a nightmare and vice versa. Working with Apple quite a lot, it's a few years ago now, but what we found was there's no work-life balance whatsoever in Apple. They've got very high standards. There's relentless pressure to deliver on difficult deadlines continually. If you don't make the effort to get to know the people around you, they won't help you. If you're there for them, they'll do anything for you. It's a matrixed organization. So it really is about building community and so on and so forth. The work-life balance aspect is a really good example. There's people working at Apple who will do a 14-hour day and they'll go home and they'll carry on working because they love it. They're obsessed. Now, if we just pause there, I mean, I could go on and describe different attributes of the Apple culture, but just that work-life balance aspect, that is enough for some people to run for the hills and think, oh my goodness, I couldn't possibly work there. The other aspect of Apple is there's no egos, there's no independent, personal, individual praise. It's about team. So that is another reason some people would say, oh my goodness, I don't even get recognized for my work, that's awful. But for the right type of person who are obsessive about quality and seeing their work in the hands of millions of people, who buy into the purpose aspects and the contribution making a difference and the sense of belonging and a high-functioning team and really finding out what they're really capable of with the support network that is Apple, it's very, very compelling. And the idea is, if you can galvanize everybody together inside the organization around common purpose and a common sense of purpose, impact, and belonging, at the same time as polarizing an external audience by putting people to a decision and more people run away from the opportunity than lean in towards it, now we've got something which is a sharp tool that is very, very functionally valuable to the organization to build, nurture, and protect a culture that's conducive to driving an organization forward, and also something that fosters a sense of appreciation and acknowledgement and identity for those who thrive within that culture. You know, so that's the approach, and you know, it's been battle tested for a decade, and it works.
Fantastic example. That makes total sense, and I hadn't really ever thought about it that way until you explained that. So can you walk me through what's the process when you're working with a company to enable them to attract the right people? What is that process, like the discovery and then the execution in order to help them to build that?
I mean, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. The key aspect of it is the research. You know, and what we're looking for is something authentic enough for employees to try on and recognize their personal experience in the messaging that we're putting out. It has to be steeped in reality. But actually, the employee view is essential from an end product perspective. But there's two other views that are really important as well from research and strategy perspective. And that is the leadership view. So understanding the direction of the organization, the capability requirements from talent, from the eyes of the leaders. And the third is the market view. So what are we trying to differentiate against and compete with in a marketplace? So we use a variety of different tactics and techniques of research. We distill that down, and what we're looking for is a common thread. Now, in a global organization with a complex talent audience, the view from finance to a manufacturing plant to sales and a variety of different geographies could be very different. But what we're looking for is the values, the same mindset, the same cultural attributes, such that we can build a campfire that everybody recognizes. Now, it might turn up differently. So the stories at the local end of the spectrum will be different, but that's okay. So it needs to be consistent enough for everybody to buy into and recognize, and agile enough to be able to tell stories across the business in different ways. So we retain the authentic nature of the employee experience as well. So it's a careful balance. So we go through the research, we distill that down, we segment it and make sure we're looking at it from a view of seniority, tenure, geography. So we really do get a 360 view. And then we build a strategy which is designed to be a very tangible bridge between the reality of today and the aspiration of tomorrow, and very clear steps in between of what it's going to take for the organization and individuals to move the organization forward. And that is a very, very important factor. A lot of people in our industry think in order to be authentic, it needs to be a snapshot of reality of today. And that's a big mistake, which we can dive into if you like. But from a strategy perspective, we then bring it to life. We walk through building a reputation, clarifying the proposition, and then designing the employee experience to align all of those elements.
So it's really interesting because you're going into an organization and they have an established culture and they may or may not already have a great employer brand. And I guess if they're working with you, it's something that they are proactively wanting to develop and improve upon. But sure, that must be really hard. How do you really change an employer brand? Especially like, I think in a startup or something, which is already very, fluid, I would imagine it's a little bit easier. But for an established company, how do you connect with the authentic current reality as well as the vision for the future, and then, put steps in place to actually shift in that direction? That, especially with a massive organization, that sounds really challenging.
Yeah, it is challenging. It's simple, but it isn't easy.
Right.
Good. Understanding the right questions to ask, the right information to put the puzzle together such that it adds up and makes sense for the organization and is still compelling to a segment of the talent audience enough to put bums on seats, but the right people where they're going to find a sense of acknowledgement and appreciation. That is the challenge. New organizations, it's a fantastic gift because you can design a fully aspirational culture to then step into.
Yes.
But every established organization, they have an employer brand, whether it's been designed or not. It's just whether it's conducive and compelling, and obviously that's the trick.
Exactly. Well, okay. Do you know what helped me to get my head around this, Brian, is what are the building blocks or the component parts of a great employer brand?
Okay, good question. So the first thing is the employer brand essence, the sort of the tagline, if you will. So if it was consumer brand, it'd be, and we use Nike as the example, it would be the just do it. Now that needs to be the start of a conversation where people can look at the sentiment of what you're saying and be intrigued or make an interpretation that, gets attention and leads to whether it's going to create affinity with an audience. Beneath that, there's then a very clear proposition developed. So, okay, what's the deal? If you come and work for us, you can expect to find X, Y, and Z. Typical people join us for this reason, but the reason they stay are A, B, C, and that is a very simple proposition that needs to be true across the organization. And then we get to a subset of communications and language where we can get to the detail of teams, individual roles, so we're looking to put a toolkit of communications together so we can put it in the hands of hiring managers and recruiters and ambassadors and advocates to really offer a consistent voice of what it's like to work at this organization, why people join, why they stay, what is the opportunity of joining this organization. So the one message needs to do a job of engagement and uplifting and galvanizing people internally, as well as creating a compelling offer externally.
Awesome. Okay, so there's the essence, which is like the tagline or the core. Then there's the proposition, the deal, like why do people join? Why do they stay? And then there's the communication toolkit around that to make sure that hiring managers, recruiters have a consistent voice in the marketplace, and that's going to attract or repel the right sorts of individuals. Is there anything else?
So typically, in order to build out that communications framework, we use the idea of pillars, you know, so the core themes found across the research. And that's where we take it a step further, and we make sure that there is a clear give and a clear get for each one of those themes. For large organizations, it's typical now for us also to do what's called persona research. So we'll segment the talent audience. And you know, we don't necessarily create new insights or aspirations of the culture there. But what we do is we then determine, okay, what of the culture do we dial up and dial down based on the priorities and preferences of each talent segment? And that allows our recruiters and hiring managers and everyone in the organization to then engage in conversation with context of who's in front of them. You know, and that makes organizations much more competitive in the marketplace, both internally and externally as well. So they're the main core components.
Could you say more about the pillars or core themes?
So if we do our research, we want to distill that down into what we've found. And typically there's buckets of insight that can all be grouped together. So I'll give you one of my favorite examples, actually. If you think, if you're familiar with VF Corp, so that's the organization behind Vans, The North Face, Timberland, Supreme. One of the themes that we found in that organization, which was fascinating, was everybody was really nice and polite, and there was an amazing sense of camaraderie and teamwork and positivity and ethics and integrity. You know, there was nobody with sharp elbows, or there was no spiky, prickly people there. They just didn't last. And that was a theme, whether it was in a manufacturing plant, in a retail store, in head office, in marketing and finance, and it was remarkable, remarkably consistent. However, what was abundantly obvious from the gap in the research and feedback from across the business was there was a sense of being too nice, to the point where people didn't want to disagree. There was a lack of challenge. It delayed decision making because people didn't want to be seen to have an ego or be too assertively, you know, aggressive in a situation. So we built a pillar around radical candor. If you remember that book, and like, it was very much at the time a few years ago.
Yeah.
And what it said was holding people to compassionate accountability is part of our employer brand to solve for something that is universally showing up across the organization. It told the story of, we are very proud of how nice we are and how supportive and positive and inclusive we are. And we're going on a journey of compassionate accountability. And part of that is radical candor. And we give you permission with compassion to give honest feedback for the good of you, for the good of others, for the good of the team. And that was the start of a transformational change across the organization, in line with something the leaders recognized that needed to change, but anchored in the reality of today. So that's just one theme of the VF solution that was universally recognized and very, very valuable in terms of maintaining what people valued about part of the culture, but also moving the organization forward to a better future.
This is fascinating, Brian, because something I hadn't expected, really, because when you think of employer branding, you're thinking about marketing and advertising, basically, right? Which is, you know, about the messaging, the image, the communication. But what you're describing is more about actual, you know, shifting of the culture of the organization itself, so almost from the inside out, rather than just, you know, painting a pretty picture of what it's like to work here. So I didn't expect that, because, you know, normally you wouldn't think of it being a marketing agency's job to consult or assist with cultural change, right? Was that always part of the mission, or is that something which you've kind of stumbled into and embraced? Like, how did that develop?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Our vision is everyone loves their job. So we want to work with the world's largest employers such that they put out authentic propositions and people can make better career decisions and find purpose, impact, and belonging. Now, our role has a very clear start and stop. You know, we need to put something out that is authentic and conducive for the organization. The overlap between what a CEO wants from a culture and what employees want and expect from a culture is this idea of expectation. And there's two parts to that. One is the cultivation and design of that proposition to set expectations. And the other is the management of it. Now, we don't do the management of it, but we do put the tools in the hands of the managers and the words in their mouth to drive it forward. So we're not responsible for organizational change, but we are responsible for understanding it and equipping the organization to go on that journey.
Okay, that makes sense. Is there anything else in your book that, like, obviously I now want to read this book, so I have a deeper understanding of this topic, but what else is in there?
So I'm a lifelong lover of story, the idea of story structure. And I've studied under Robert McKee, who's like the Yoda of story. And I've interviewed some of the world's greatest storytellers to identify their secrets. And I've developed story structure specifically for employer brand. And a lot of it is in the book. So, you know, knowing the right message and points that you want to make is one thing, but connecting with humans and communicating effectively is another. So there's a number of techniques from that perspective. You know, and the things that you mentioned just there, like we do those as well, and like that stuff is in the book. But really, they're the tactical outputs at the end of cultivating something which is fit for purpose. So the majority of the book is how to align a reputation as an employer with the organization, and then how to cultivate a proposition which is both compelling and conducive to the organization. So that's the heart of the book. And then, you know, I'm working on my next book now, which is a clear gap in the market of talking to CEOs about culture and what they're looking for, and talking to an employer brand leader and building something. There's still a little bit of a gap in between. So that's what I'm currently thinking of. And hopefully that'll be out later towards this year.
Oh, excellent. What is that gap? What's the divergence between what CEOs want from the culture versus what, you know, employees or brand leaders want?
So one of the biggest things in our little space I see all too often is employer brand leaders fail to present a credible business case to the leadership of an organization and justify why employer brand is so important. Now, you can imagine that frustrates the life out of me. It's sort of life's work, if you like, and I've seen the transformational change it can have. But understandably, I think CEOs and leadership all too often are presented with research from an employer brand perspective and evidence of what the culture is like. And the first reaction is, but that's not the culture I want. So I don't want you creating a comms framework around the snapshot of today, because that's not going to drive the organization forward. So there is a miscommunication at a very macro level. And I think part of it is because what leadership defined culture as is different to what an employee defines culture as. And there's a gap in the middle, which I intend to fill.
Okay, fantastic. What are the mistakes that you see companies making when it comes to employer branding?
Another great question, Mark. And I think the biggest one, which I see all the time, and it's human nature, is building an employer brand and crafting an EVP, which is only consistent of the strengths, the benefits, and opportunities to be found in pursuit of being the shiniest, most attractive proposition in the marketplace. And we've got to give our audience a little bit more credit than that, because you know, the average candidate will do research 6 to 8 hours on a brand before choosing whether to decide to apply or not. And that's because they are cynical and skeptical and they have reservations, and it can't all be perfect because no job is. So what we found is it's much better to embrace the full 360 of that conversation and not just be more truthful and talk about some of the negatives, but tell your story in the context of why there are harsh realities and adversities to be found. And actually, therein lies the X marks the spot. That's where to dig for the gold that exists in every organization. Most organizations completely pass this by, but if you talk about those challenges and the adversities, it's the fastest way to discover the unlimited source of passion and pride inside of your organization. So that's the biggest mistake that I see time and time again.
Okay, this is fascinating. So let's talk a little more about that. How, first of all, do you uncover those challenges, adverse situations that are not perfect about the company or the job? And then how do you use those to, in fact, as part of your talent attraction strategy?
So you get a room full of software engineers together or marketing executives together in any room, and you start off that 1 or 2 hour interactive session by saying, let's start here. If it was your job to dissuade somebody from joining this organization and you couldn't lie, what would you say? And you immediately open the floodgates. Everybody has an opinion. Well, you know, there's relentless deadlines. You know, there's work-life balance isn't great. And you can't work from home now. You've got to come back into the office. And all of the things. And you gather all of those aspects. And people are not backward in coming forward with that stuff. And then once you've collected all that stuff, you ask the simple question, wow, okay, that's tough. That's tough. So if somebody's starting a role based on what we've just discovered, what's your greatest advice for being able to cope or dare we say even thrive in this? What does it really take to thrive? And then people are also very willing to share that information with you as well, because of course what they're doing is they're telling you all about what they're very proud of and what they're capable of. And they're talking about their own capability, and they'll recognize strengths in others. Quite often that's how they'll communicate the strengths they admire in themselves. They'll project it onto others. So now you've got a sense of what it really takes to thrive and some of the challenges. And then the next question is, wow, so tell us, why did you join? And given everything we've talked about, why do you stay? And they will now make the argument that despite everything they've said, it's still a great place of work and they find purpose, impact, and belonging because, and then you listen intently and then you ask a follow-up question and really, really dig, okay, what does it mean to you? How do you find personal purpose? How do you get a sense of impact and that your contribution matters? And how do you feel like you belong? And that's the magic. And I'll tell you, Mark, the best measure of a session like that is how many in the room end up with tears in their eyes telling you a very personal story. And I'm yet to do a session like that where it hasn't happened.
Wow, that is really powerful. That's gold right there, Brian. Thank you. That's you've given a set of specific questions to sort of unlock, the real, I guess you used the word essence, but the truth of an organization and the both the kind of warts and all story of, why it's not perfect, but then why people love it anyway kind of thing. So that's brilliant. And in fact, it's a good segue into my next kind of question, because our audience, as you know, are recruitment agencies, staffing companies, executive search firms. And so this question of the reputation, the brand of an employer is absolutely huge, and yet it's one we don't have much influence on, right? So, because your job as a recruiter is to be an ambassador for that company, to represent them in the talent marketplace, to tell their story in a compelling way, to get candidates to engage with you and take an interest. Maybe someone who's not looking for a job, who is, you know, happily employed and performing in their current position. And our job as recruiters trying to get their attention, which is difficult in the first place, and get them to actually reply back or be open to a conversation or open to receiving a little more information about that opportunity. And so the messaging and the communication and having a great story to tell is so, so important. Now, a great recruiter can help a company with that, but fundamentally they're not, you know, they can only work with what's already there, right? They can try and find the gold and you know, highlight those things. I think, you know, it's really wise what you've said about also recognizing what's not perfect and being very careful not to oversell the opportunity or misrepresent it, and to give a positive and yet accurate portrayal of what this company is all about, what it's like to work there, what the opportunity is and isn't, and so on. But what advice do you have for our listeners in terms of how they can best partner with their client companies in order to achieve their objectives within the context of employer branding, bearing in mind that, you know, they're not our listeners are typically not specialists in employer branding as you are. They're not paid to go and consult or advise. They can give feedback. They can say, here's what I'm hearing in the market. Here's often that's the take we are getting is, you mentioned the three sources of research. So there's the leadership, there's the employees, and then there's the market, right? And in terms of what that employer brand is. So when recruiters go out and speak to candidates about the opportunity, they're going to get feedback, which is the perceptions that exist already in the market about that company, about that department, about that job, and positive and negative, right? So what advice do you have for recruiters in terms of approaching this particular topic in a way that's going to serve them and their client companies?
Yeah, and I think this is the, you know, the $6 million question. And, you know, the best advice there is don't try and out-Google Google. You know, Google can come out in the marketplace and say, we're the best, we're the biggest, we're number one, we've got the best infrastructure, we've got learning and development that's world-renowned, we're going to pay you three times than anyone else and all the rest of it. You go head-to-head with an organization like that, and everybody has their competitive version of Google, then you're going to lose. If we look at David and Goliath, this is my favorite story, and actually my co-author wrote about that in the book. David was never going to lose that fight against Goliath. He was always going to win that fight because he used his strengths, which was agility and speed and everything that was going for him. So we've got to find what are the strengths of our particular situation. You know, we can also take a lesson from the Marines. 99.9% need not apply. Now, that's interesting because if you're tapped on the shoulder and you say, look, this isn't right for most people. In fact, here's five reasons not to even consider working here. But if you've got what it takes to thrive in these conditions, here's what we're finding. These are the reasons why there's a small team of incredible people sticking around at this company. Now, if this floats your boat, this benefit and this opportunity and these strengths, now we can talk. Most people haven't got what it takes, or most people can't put up with this or that, and be very upfront. Use the 8-mile approach if you've seen that movie. You know, get all of the objections out there. You know, and it's almost like a game of poker. You're looking for a reason to play your hand as much as you are to fold it. You're not looking to sell somebody. You're looking to find out if they're a good match and make them lean in. If you oversell somebody, there's a good chance that they'll drop out or they won't last, or, you know, and the worst thing a recruiter can do is oversell and have people leave after 3 months or whatever. So psychology tells us, if we tell you, look, you might not be right for this. And here's a load of reasons why not. Mm-hmm. Psychology tells us we're creating intrigue, and there's a story. I mentioned story structure. There's a formula to this.
Okay.
So the formula is this: empathy, curiosity, surprise, insight, and action. So let me walk you through that. Empathy is an emotional immediate connection to the organization, what they're trying to do, and the purpose and vision of the organization. Curiosity is something that differentiates you from everybody else, that gets people to lean in. So there's an emotional connection, and now we're leaning in. Surprise is, here's three things that you didn't know. You weren't expecting this. So what we're doing is we're opening the right side of the mind now, the right side of the brain, such that you're now ready to receive facts and information, insights and specifics that you can deliver about the role. So we've talked about the company. Maybe there's curiosity about the team and the specific objectives in that team. Then insight around the specific role. And then we make a call to action. Usually the call to action ties everything together from a purpose perspective. And if you walk through that formula, it's incredibly powerful if you have a proposition that is articulated and it's compelling and true, that plays on, you know, all of the strengths that we've talked about.
I love that framework. Empathy, curiosity, surprise, insight. What was the last step there?
Action.
Action. Yes,
the call to action.
Yeah. Love it. I have studied story quite a lot as well, but not in this context. So it's really interesting how you've applied that body of work to helping companies to tell their story. What got you interested in story? And if people want to kind of go deeper on that particular topic, what reference or book would you point them to as a good starting point?
Oh, that's a good question. So Robert McKee, he does some great workshops and courses. It's very intense, and it's actually positioned in the industry of Hollywood film and script writing, but it's amazing. Yeah. It's a masterclass. There's a variety of books. The classic Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey is probably
Hero's
one
Journey.
To,
yeah, that's the one I've yeah. heard of.
Then you've got Houston, We Have a Narrative, which is about the and but therefore formula, which is probably the simplest story technique. And then there's a litany of others, but that should be good to get you started. Michael Haig is another one to look up. Story Wars is a fantastic book. There's a lot of material. We're actually bringing out a storytelling sprint course, which is a 3-week course in about 6 months' time, specifically to offer people accreditations in storytelling for the employer brand and recruiting space.
But oh, that's cool.
It's not out yet. Yeah, it's not out yet, but it's much needed, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. That's because I don't know of any. That's the thing. People need to read, like, you know, some of the works you've just suggested, whether it's Joseph Campbell or whatever, but then they need to sort of connect the dots themselves to their own work and find ways to apply it. How can people kind of hear more about that course when it's available, Brian?
So if you visit ph-creative.com, sign up for our newsletter, make an inquiry, you know, check out our existing sprint courses, or just connect with me on LinkedIn. So it's Brian Adams, like the Canadian singer, spelled the same. That's going to be really exciting because we've developed story structure specifically for brand awareness, for personal and professional development stories, for persona engagement, and a variety of specifics. So we've done that legwork and that work that you've just talked about, Mark, and I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I would be really interested in that because this is, as I said, a topic I've thought a lot about, and you know, we try and apply it in our writing and our own communications, but I've never seen it directly applied for the sort of talent and recruiting space. So yeah, I'm definitely interested in that. I made the mistake of asking two questions rolled into one, Brian. So the one that I'd like to go back to is, how did you get into, like, what sparked your interest in storytelling and, you know, bringing that into your work? What does that stem back to?
So I am a huge movie goer and lover of film. And when I retire and sell the agency and the consultancy and our tech company, I'm going to make a feature film. In fact, we have a small film production company called Reckless Kid, and we make short films. I absolutely love that space. So it's a passion of mine. And the more I studied that as a sort of hobby and just sort of went down various rabbit holes, I saw the connection with just communication and branding. And it was a source of joy to connect the two worlds, to be honest, Mark.
Interesting. Okay. Do you make films for your clients, like as part, or, you know, telling their story through media, essentially?
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll make what we call sort of brand essence, sort of cornerstone films, you know, and they can be, you know, the big showcase sort of stuff. So we do that more and more now. We'll do lower budgets with sort of lesser format, you know, so it ranges from the 6-second story to, you know, the three minute brand story and everything in between. And that is extremely powerful in a world of video and rich media. It's essential now.
Yeah. No, absolutely. One more thing I wanted to ask you, Brian, is a lot of the examples you've given have been really huge corporations. Do you have a case study or an example which is more of a, you know, a small to medium size business in terms of developing a communication and employer branding strategy for them?
Yeah, I mean, we market all of our sort of big global brands. We work with a long tail of mid-sized organizations, and we love working with startups with a blank canvas. So it really is. It's an experience by design. We've worked with a variety of organizations like that, and usually it's a very quick, cost-effective, short burst of thinking, and then all of the budget and time can then go into the activation. I mean, the principles that we use apply to a very small startup right up to global organizations, absolutely. So one of my favorites actually is an organization based out of Boston, Sage Therapeutics. It was a few years ago now, but I visited there myself, and I met CHRO, Erin, an amazing woman, fantastically talented, very smart. And I literally holed up there for a few weeks, went away, did some homework, came back and iterated with Erin. And in less than 5 weeks, we wrote the employer brand based on the research they'd already done and some interviews I conducted myself. And it was a very agile sort of guerrilla marketing approach, very small piece of work. And then they activated incredibly well and engaged their people. And it's an amazing company. So we put our finger on, you know, what it meant to be there. I think we produced something quite special. And then they were off at the races, you know, and they managed to then put all of their remaining budget into activation and proving to their people and future people that what they were claiming was true, you know. And it's so absolutely, this isn't about huge budgets. This is about insight and getting to human truths that make sense for an organization, as well as being compelling for people to want to be part of. So budget, you know, budget is just the admin in the background.
I'll tell you the motivation for me asking about small and medium sized businesses is because that is the profile of our own clients, right? Because most of the recruitment agencies and search firms we work for are boutiques rather than behemoths. And of course, they have to attract their own talent, right? Which ironically can be harder for a small business owner to recruit recruiters than to recruit for their client companies. And so, you know, it's actually you know, physician, heal thyself, right? It's like, how do you create your own employer brand in order to attract people to your team in order to then go and recruit, you know, more successfully for your clients? So I was just wondering if there are any differences in how you would approach it if it was a really small company, not a startup necessarily, but a kind of scale up, let's say, would be a more accurate description. You know, I'm sure all the same principles apply, but there's not going to be, you know, a CHRO even, or anyone like that. There's going to be the managing director and then a handful of, you know, team members, which I guess makes it easier in terms of the research and the interviews and so on. There's fewer, you know, fewer people involved, but there's also less to draw upon, right? There's less existing culture that you can reference. So you mentioned in that situation, it is more aspirational. So what would you be looking for there in order to be able to, you know, really tell a great story and attract the right people to that sort of size of organization, like really small, looking to scale?
The approach is exactly the same, but actually it's the activation that where the big difference is. And for organizations, I mean, that's why we wrote the book and sort of gave away the blueprint. And it's why we've developed the strategy and development courses, you know, so you can, for $400, we show you exactly how to do it yourself and how you should be thinking about it. But if you're a small company and you've let's assume you've done that, the benefit of being small and agile is usually, and right at the start of something, is usually there's a lot of passion and there's a lot of excitement and there's a sense of, a tribal sense of togetherness that you can only have in small teams. Mm. Harness that and use the voice of your employees as advocates. People trust other people rather than brands, you know, 10 to 10x as the trust they put in brands. And you have the unique opportunity, which is a small window of opportunity, to paint the picture of how you see the future and what you stand for and what you want to change. Everybody roots for the underdog, and everybody wants to join a small team that stands for something meaningful, and they need to see where they will fit in. So tell the story of, we can only get there if we're looking for people to help us along this journey. That's why we need you. And play on the fact that you're not the number one in the market. Use it as a strength, not a weakness. Use what you've got, you know. And if you produce video, it can be from your iPhone. You've just got to be compelling and intentional about how you put stories together. The other thing with a small company is, if everybody posts on their LinkedIn or their Facebook and Instagram and so on and so forth, you've got a great advocacy opportunity that typically exists in small companies. You've just got to use the hand that you're dealt. And often you can have a lot of fun, move with agility, and you'd be surprised what you can achieve with zero budget, because it makes you think more creatively.
Awesome. I love that. That's so true. You mentioned guerrilla marketing earlier, Brian. Have you read that book or books? It's a series, I guess.
I've read a lot of budget marketing with no budget, absolutely out of necessity. I haven't read that particular book for a long time, but it is on my shelf somewhere.
Yeah, it's a great one. J. Conrad Levinson coined the term guerrilla marketing. I actually got a chance to chat with him on a call like this with a small group, because I was the UK's first certified guerrilla marketing coach, and this is going back early 2000s. And the course was run by a guy called Mitch Mayerson, who co-authored a few books with Jay and brought Jay on to one of the sessions. And so I'm glad I got to speak to him. He's passed on now. So, but he was a copywriter at a big ad agency. I can't remember which one. Mm-hmm. And came up with a lot of iconic brands that people are, you know, consumer brands that people are familiar with, but then felt more of a kinship with the small businesses, so it kind of catered to that audience when he became a marketing consultant. But yeah, good one to revisit. Brian, you mentioned the singer, so I wasn't going to bring it up, but since you mentioned it, that must cause some humor and or confusion when you tell people your name. Like, can you think of a story where that's been particularly the case?
Well, it's really a day goes by before somebody comments on my name. You know, and it is funny because what I find is sometimes it's easier to get restaurant and hotel reservations. But the downside to that is I'm constantly met with disappointed faces when I turn up. Can you imagine everywhere you go, people are disappointed to meet you, you know?
Hilarious. Brian, this has been fun. Thanks for being on The Resilient Recruiter.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed that. Thanks, Mark.
Look forward to it. I'm going to read this book, so I'm looking forward to reading that. And definitely, I'm sure people will put your website in the show notes for people to go and check out your sprint courses and get on the newsletter so they can find out about this story course that you've got coming out. So,
really appreciate
it. Awesome. Have a great rest of your day.
Oh, magic. Thanks, Mark. Take care.